This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh. I'm Frank Stacio. With a reminder, you can watch us this whole program streaming live at stateofthings.org. Okay, let's see here. It says here, avoid contact with skin, eyes, and clothing. I'm reading the warning label on super glue. So why did I apply it to my face this morning? I did it for science, of course. Part of a project here at the Museum of Natural Sciences, we're going to find out what creatures are making a home on my face in just a moment. Stateofthings.org. I believe my face might be on the screen right now. This type of research is actually part of a project here at the museum. It's funded by a $7.3 million grant from the National Science Foundation. The project pairs scientists with teachers in four different labs to learn methods that they can then take back to the classroom. Rob Dunn is the principal investigator on the grant and a biology professor at NC State. Welcome back, Rob. Good to have you here.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Frank.
Julie Urban is the assistant director of genomics and microlab here at the Nature Research Center, and she also works with the grant program and helped me paste a little slide on my face today. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. Amy Lawson, an eighth grade science teacher, is participating in this program this summer. Teaches at Burgaw Middle School in Pender County. Welcome, Amy. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Rob, tell us before we talk about the face mites in a minute, I promise, but tell us about this grant and what the goal is.
Well, so we've been working for a number of years now in what we call citizen science, where citizens participate in doing science. And so we have projects on face mites, on belly button microbes, on ants in backyards, on mammals in backyards. But all of the work that we've been doing with those projects was, to the extent that it had an educational component, it was informal education. And so you work as part of our scientific team, and you learn by doing science. But one of the things we noticed was that as we engaged people, that teachers and educators around the world were starting to make lesson plans associated with our science. And so it seemed like there was this real opportunity to do formal education around these kinds of projects. But we didn't have a clue how to do that. And so we were able to pull together a team of, you know, Liz Baird and other educators at the Museum of Natural Sciences, Julie Urban here, Meg Lauman is now at the Cal Academy, Jenny Korn is with the Friday Institute, the Keenan Fellows Program, and then all these teachers to actually try to do this in a way that our group on our own, we never would have been able to do. And so it's like a super team for science, education, truth, and understanding.
Wow. Nothing less than that. Nothing short of that as a goal. So, Julie, how does this team put together, and what are the goals? How does this project work?
I'm a museum scientist here, and our team consists of four postdocs. So these are scientists, and they're actually leading and constructing these original research projects. And so they're doing real science, and they want to publish it and find new things. And each postdoc has three teachers who are working with them for 3 weeks in our lab this summer now. And they're going to use these projects and create original lesson plans that the teachers will take back to their classrooms and will involve the teachers and students in making these new discoveries.
So it's one thing to hang around a lab with some really good scientists as a grade school teacher, right, as a classroom teacher, and say, oh, I think I could develop a lesson plan around that. But actually, the teachers and the students are going to be participating. They're going to be generating some of the data. Tell us how that works.
Yes,
maybe
certainly.
We can use the face mite project as a case in point.
We can use the face mite as a great example. We have our postdoc, Dan Fergus, who is the lead on that, and several of us have been collaborating with him. And so he's been working actually on the face mite project for 2 years. There's a lot underlying it. And so right now, probably as we speak, he's working with teachers to extract DNA from swabs they've taken of their faces, where they're going to extract and amplify mite DNA, and teachers will be sampling themselves and other teachers throughout the state and create, in that case, probably a DNA sequence database.
All right. So here we have to stop and talk about the mighty face mite.
Yes.
And talk about why that's important. And so maybe we should talk a little bit about, you know, sort of what they are and why anybody would be interested in sequencing their DNA.
These are animals that live on the face of all adults. And so just straight up, we know that we have microbes, we have bacteria and fungi that live on us, but actually we have these tiny little arthropods that live inside of your pores, and we don't know it. They're likely at least benign, but perhaps beneficial to us. And we're interested in them for several different reasons, but one is because we think that they might tell us a story of human movement on the planet. We might learn about our history by studying theirs.
Now, tell us how you would learn that. You were talking to me earlier when I was peeling a slide off my face. Apparently to distract me from the
sure.
It didn't hurt that much. Tell us a little bit about how human movement, what we can tell about human movement from the genes of face mites.
Well, basically what we do is we amplify and look at the DNA sequence of a certain gene in these mites, and basically from that we can analyze those sequences, and we can see, you know, much like we would with our own family history, we can see which mites are most closely related to other mites.
Well, what's interesting to me is that we have two different kinds of mites, right? We've got some that are a little closer to the surface and then some that kind of burrow a little deeper in our face.
Yes, there's actually two different species. And we can see in their DNA, their sequence is very different from each other. And what's interesting is that the one that lives near the surface, we think it comes out at night and mates on your face and moves around a lot. You know, when we look at...
And I thought it was caffeine keeping me awake.
No, not
that's
so much. And so when we look at the DNA sequences of those mites collected from folks here in Raleigh and then some from the internet that other folks have collected from other studies, when we look and see how those mites are... what their relationship is, they're all kind of willy-nilly. They're passed around a lot. But the species, it's Demodex brevis, that lives much more deeply hunkered into our sebaceous glands, kind of off of our hair follicles. When we looked at how those mites were related to each other, we were very surprised because we found that all of the mites that we collected from folks here in Raleigh, they were very closely related to each other relative to mites from folks who were sampled in China from previous researchers. And so essentially that shows their mites show the relationship of their hosts in a sense.
So you can tell how we moved and when we moved once you start knowing more about their DNA.
Exactly. So we're really moving with Dan Fergus and Megan Thames. She's a graduate student in Rob's lab, and they're really running with us. And we're sampling folks from all sorts of different places around the world to see if we can get that structure and see if they're going to tell us the story of human movement.
Well, so Amy, tell us about your project, because you're not working strictly with face mites in your project, right?
Right, no. I'm in the genomics lab with the face mites, but we're working on soil. So we're working on the fungus and the bacteria that are in the soil, and we're going to be working with dandelions and looking at what the microbiome is on the dandelions. And so we're going to be seeing at the dandelion how they can recruit. And this is led up by Julia Stevens, who's the postdoc in our field. And we're going to be working in the lab on that.
All right. So tell us what you do while you're here. And then, of course, the next step is what's going to happen in that classroom.
Right. Well, while we're here, we're actually in the lab and we're doing the science. We've brought soil from our different areas to test, and we're going to be trying to grow dandelions in our soil. So I brought soil from Pender County and New Hanover County, because those are the counties that I live near. And then Wake County participants brought their soil from there. So we're going to be using that soil, and we're going to be doing the tests on that to see which microbes come and join in with the dandelions. And then we're going to be building curriculum. And that's the most important part of this, is to build the curriculum that we're going to be able to use in our classroom to tie to the North Carolina Essential Standards that we can actually use in place of another activity that we've already been using. So it's very important to be able to make it so something that other teachers can use in the future. We're hoping that we'll be able to take it back this year. We're kind of like the guinea pigs. We're the first group of citizen science to be taking it back to the classroom and do it with our students. And then we're going to actually then hope to build it so that we can make it so it'll go out to other teachers in North Carolina and hopefully to the rest of the United States.
So the dandelions in the soil is going to be in your classroom at some point, and your
right.
students are going to have a part in at least doing measurements and...
Right, yeah. So we'll be collecting the bacteria and the fungus and all the microbes, and we're going to be able to be sending it back to the museum, all the data that we collected. So the students in citizen science, is the point of it is that they're going to actually be able to be a part of an actual scientific research study.
And you can imagine this. These are students at what level?
I teach 8th grade, so we're in middle school. And in my school in particular, we're a Title I school where over 80% of the students have free and reduced lunch. So having access to here in Raleigh and being able for them to know that they're working with actual real scientists here at the museum is an amazing opportunity for them. So it's an awesome opportunity to be working here.
And this is not a demonstration with, you know, vinegar and baking soda that
right.
where we know the answer already.
Right.
We don't know the answers.
Exactly. So they're being real scientists going out trying to teach them, hey, we don't know everything that's going on in the world, so let's go out and find it out.
Yeah, and 10 years from now or 3 years from now, when there is a discovery, they'll say, hey, I was in on that. And
right.
They'll be deeply interested in ways that we might not expect a student would be 3 years after leaving eighth grade. Right, Rob?
Yeah, no, I think it's incredibly exciting. I mean, I was reflecting as Amy was talking that if in eighth grade I knew that I could make new discoveries, I think I would have actually physically exploded with joy. I mean, I thought that I was finding things in the natural world that other people knew, and I just had to go figure out where they were already written about. But the reality is that most of what's knowable, we just don't know. And so to be able to take a generation of students and take them out into the unknown and show them the process of doing science, it's so thrilling.
Yeah, and I think that's something. And Julie, I'll put this question to you, although I'm sure you all have something to say about it. You're probably interested in science because you know there's something we don't know yet. And sadly, the way we learn science was, here's all that's known about the world, Frank, and the test is Thursday. Get it in your head. The idea of transmitting that joy of discovery to students versus just the pure knowledge must be kind of exciting for you.
Oh, yes, and this is the best place on the planet to work for this. I mean, you can't, you know, you get to super glue people's faces and look at their mites and show them you have an animal. I mean, it's so exciting, and it's exciting. We have so many different projects going on, not just in our lab but around the museum, that there's just always a new discovery.
What's the difference for you, though, Amy, as a classroom teacher? I mean, clearly you could have been engaged in this, right? We could have sent you an email and said we want teachers all over the state to do this. Mm-hmm. What's the value to you of actually being in the lab and working with the postdocs?
Actually being in the lab and working with the postdocs is we actually get that actual experience of them showing us how it's done, and so that we're sure that we're doing it scientifically accurate, so that our data is valid data. So that's really important. The other part of it is I'm working with two other fellow teachers, and being able to work with Laura and Arthena has been awesome, getting to know them and being able to collaborate with them to build the curriculum. So it's not just one mind building the curriculum, it's all three or four of our minds working together.
That is probably one of the worst parts about teaching, right? You work in your little cell, and you'd love to be able to collaborate with teachers more, and where's the time?
Right, yeah, that's very true. It's awesome to actually get a chance to work with others. And having 12 other Keenan Fellows here, 12 of us in total, collaborating together, it's been a fantastic opportunity so far, and it's just going to get better.
And here's the part of this discovery that I think is so exciting. When I saw the mite from my face, it just threw me into worlds of speculation. I mean, I actually saw this thing. It's kind of Spielberg-esque. You know, it looks like it could do some damage at a little larger size. And I thought about, well, okay, why is that thing there? I'm hoping that it serves some purpose. I'm imagining it's cleaning my follicles. I'm imagining my skin is an organ that needs air. And wouldn't it be great if I had this vacuum cleaner that was alive and working all the time? I'm speculating. It could be totally bad science, but that's what scientists do, right?
Certainly, right? Yes. And that's why you care. You have these ideas and you want to test them.
Mm-hmm. And Rob, of course, that's what you've been all about. And so you've done some speculation and some actual research on the biota that is now us, and changed the way we think about self, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, we're covered with this layer of life. It includes animals and bacteria and fungi. Everything we touch is covered in life, and most of that life has never, ever been studied. And so, I mean, we have this great job to be able to think about what that means when we know very little. And so, I mean, your experience of thinking about what the mite is doing, I mean, that's what we get to do. That's the most joyful part of our job, and to be able to share that with other people and let people realize that we know so little that you can sit at home and think about what's going on, and your hypothesis, you know, is might be reasonable and testable and right.
Well, and it throws you into other realms as well. I mean, the kind of areas of speculation that you get off into takes you beyond, you know, a cure for acne, which I'm sure could be part of this. You start to think about, well, what does it mean to be me? I mean, if I'm looking in the mirror every day and I see me but I don't see the mites, and they're an important part, and your research has shown that if we weighed all of the stuff that isn't us, it probably outweighs the stuff that kind of is us, right? I mean, in the sense of other organisms helping us stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers of cells of other kinds of things in us vastly outnumber our own cells, and the amount of DNA, the diversity of that DNA. And so we're this amalgam. And the great thing about being part of a collaboration is we collaborate with our mites, we collaborate with our bacteria, we collaborate with teachers and educators and lots of other folks. And so it's a big circus.
You were doing scientifically what the mystics have tried to do for a long time, is to show us how we are all interrelated and part of a one big oneness. Yeah, and it's science. I saw it in a microscope. What are we speculating on, Julie? Do we have any kind of good guesses yet about what all these mites are all about?
No, not really. I mean, we really think that they're symbiotic, that they're likely beneficial. But that's what's really crazy is that we don't know, that these are organisms that literally 100% of us have and we don't know. So we're our colleague Dan Fergus, the postdoc, he and another collaborator, Holly Menninger, worked with some folks at the USDA to take scanning electron microscopy, so fancy high-res microscope images, and they're using them to actually look at the structure of the mites to try to infer how they might be feeding, because that might be how we learn a lot of this, based on their shape.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of one of my first questions. So the cool thing is, again, this way of speculating, I thought, well, how do they eat? And then you would have to examine their digestive system from the mouth on through to see if they're tearing bits of me off or if they're mm-hmm. passively waiting for something to hit their mouth, which could start to answer the question, are they beneficial or not?
Exactly. And so far, what we can see, it looks like they're not tearing or sucking or piercing our cells. It doesn't look like they have those mouth parts, but we're still figuring that out.
Cooler yet, as tiny as these things are and they're living on me, you're actually studying the bacteria that live on the mites.
Yes. So basically, again, what's really cool with the Mite Project and with the Soil Project and other projects in the genomics lab, we're doing it based on DNA sequencing. And so these are things that you couldn't do, you physically could not do 10 years ago, and you couldn't afford to do until like maybe 5 years ago. And so basically, I'm able to use the same technology that Amy and the Soil and Team Dirt are using to sequence, you know, the bacteria inside, you know, in dirt, and I'm going to sequence all the bacteria inside of these mites and see if that bacterial community in the mites of people who have healthy skin differs at all from that of the mites of folks who have maybe some skin disorders like rosacea or types of acne.
Very cool stuff. Amy, how do you imagine this going? You must have sort of looked into the future and imagined what's going to happen in your classroom when you start this.
I'm imagining kids being super excited about science. Actually getting the hands-on experience of actually doing science is a great thing. I know one of the most important things at my school that I enjoy doing is our Science Olympiad, where the kids actually jump in and actually build things and learn things and do all kinds of stuff together. And you know, my fellow teacher, who's one of the Keenan Fellows, David Glenn, has helped do that. So both of us were so excited to get to be a part of the Keenan Fellows because that's what we want to see kids doing. We want to see the kids doing science, getting their hands dirty, literally in mine, and you know, in the soil, and doing science, getting data, doing research, and them realizing that what they're doing in the classroom is meaningful and is data that's being collected to learn something new about the world.
Think of how upside down this is. You talked about the Olympiad. You get to make mistakes. In fact, you're going to make mistakes. You're right. Going to speculate. You're going to be wrong. How different that is from the way we learn things, which is here are the answers and Friday's the test, mm-hmm. right? So the idea of experiencing it and saying that your mistake is mm-hmm. critical to the development of the information that we don't have yet.
Right, yeah, that's how science has always worked. I mean, I guess you ask the question and you prove yourself wrong until finally maybe you get it right, but oftentimes in science, we never get it right. We're still trying to figure everything out. So that's an important thing for kids to learn and understand, too. It's okay to make mistakes. Yeah. That's in science and the rest of life. So,
how much of the curriculum will be about, though? Because you can't be dismissive of all the wonderful information that scientists have amassed. How much of your curriculum will be going back and studying what we do know about soil and bacteria?
Yeah, a lot of our curriculum will be. It will be fitting in with the North Carolina Essential Standards, but not just science. We have math teachers and language arts teachers as well. So we're trying to build it into all the curriculum and trying to make it focus back to so that we can do this experiment and they'll be getting all kinds of different information that the kids will remember doing that, and it'll help them with their math skills and with their science skills.
What a great project, and thank you for helping me extract my mite.
Anytime.
I'm feeling a little lighter today. Rob Dunn is a principal investigator on a grant project and a biology professor at NC State. Julie Urban is an assistant director of genomics and microlab here at the Nature Research Center. And Amy Lawson is an eighth grade science teacher at Burgaw Middle School in Pender County. Thank all of you for being on the program. So great to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
This, by the way, is part of our American Graduate Program and our series here on the State of Things, where next you will hear about a debut novel by a Raleigh attorney. Kim Church joins us on the State of Things. Stay tuned.